Good afternoon, everybody. Glad to be on this distinguished panel, and thank you all for hanging in here with us. My stomach is growling. I don't know about yours, but advocacy is so important in school, and I wish I had got the training that we talked about earlier and the training I'm going to talk about. When I went to school, we really didn't have Section 504 wasn't passed yet when I went in the Rehab Act of 73. Actually, it was passed after I graduated from college, but I went from a community college and I was in business administration, got my degree, and then went to a four-year college, and there were steps all the way up to the third floor for my business degree program. So I decided I'm going to change my major. So I'm now a psychologist today because I could get into Gildemeister Hall, which was accessible. Now, is that sick and wrong or what? But anyway, that's why I'm here today. And not in some business meeting. We're talking about today the ADA accommodations model. It's a new tool for empowering students with disabilities. And as everybody talked, I was kind of thinking about different points. And a lot of our things that we're talking about, there's some synergy and relationship to what each is doing. Funding source recognition. This is NIDR, the National Institute of Disability and Rehabilitation Research, a premier funder to many of us, funded this through an FIP. And these are my colleagues, a host of thousands. But Jean Ann Summers, Alice Zhang, Jeff Gordon in the front here, Leslie Schmeley, and Ng Vo. Ng was the one that really kind of first thought about this, and she was from Vietnam and really thought about the notion of equity and parity when you think about education. So I've got to give her credit for that. Disclosures, I have no relationships fiscally to disclose. And one disclosure, this is a little bit on the blue side, the background, so I hope that doesn't affect anybody. But so, purpose of today's presentation is really threefold. Today I want to talk about a rationale for self-advocacy training for post-secondary students with disabilities. I want to talk about the ADA accommodations model, this model we developed, and how it's kind of progressed, what are the kind of next steps. And we're going to talk a little bit about a field training test we did across four different universities where we actually went out and did on-site training. And really learned a lot. So rationale for self-advocacy training, and this is being borne out by really some of the other points that people brought up as well. First, employers are seeking more qualified and educated personnel. That's a obvious point. Access to higher education even becomes more critical, especially if you want to have well-paid employment. We know that there's a relationship. It's kind of the key that really opens the door, doesn't it, to many people as they want to progress in their career and do better. High school, we talked about IEPs, now talk about the learning programs or plans. But post-secondary, they don't really attend to that much. And there's a lot of students that don't even self-identify that they have a disability. So unless they self-identify, it's kind of hard to, you can't just track them down and say, well, you have a disability, right? Although I've been known to go up to somebody in a wheelchair and talk to them and try to recruit them to do something. But Celine talked about the falling off the cliff, you know, the idea there. The same thing really happens for children when they get to education as well. They don't really have those safeguards. So how do we help them to do that? Participation rate in labor force, if you really compare 2011 statistics, people with disabilities who completed higher levels of education were more likely to be employed in 2011 than those with less education. You can see there's a similarity for those that, without disabilities represented by the red bars. So the education really is an important factor. College graduation is much lower for students with disabilities versus those without. And they say, well, that's maybe kind of obvious. But, you know, it's very hard for, if you want to have a really successful graduation rate, you have to reduce those barriers that people face so they don't drop out, so they don't have attrition, so they don't give up. So from a faculty point of view, and as a faculty member myself at KU, sometimes they have limited knowledge about disability rights laws. The accommodations, they may have no clue about what the accommodations are, but there is a requirement, you know, that from the Student Disability Services Office that they help to work with them. Now, not all professors take that literally. Some, especially for some people with physical disabilities, they might be more likely to accommodate. If you have a learning disability, invisible disability, they might think you're a malingerer, or you're a faker, whatever. And so they might be not so likely to do that. Might have more skepticism in doing the accommodations. And may even have negative attitudes and low expectations about what the student can actually do, right? Many of us have found that to be true. What about the student side? Oftentimes, they may lack access to successful role models. Never really see anybody. Myself, when I first went to, I was the first one from my family to go to college. I never had any role models. I didn't know any other people with disabilities that were going to school or what I could even do. Awareness of and access to technology could help reduce their productivity and independence. Now, there's more technology available now, and we've heard about some of those today. But still, it's one point. I've had students very well aware of what ADA was, but were not able to really fully articulate it when they wanted to get accommodations from professors or other staff members. One's now went on to be a lawyer, so hopefully they'll do well. So they don't know their rights. If you don't know your rights, it's kind of hard to advocate for what you need, right? Or some might have an idea of what accommodations they need, and it's not really an accommodation. So we talk about that. What is a good ADA accommodation versus no? So, and then the self-advocacy skills or self-determination skills. So the model I'm going to go over very briefly here. I'm going to want to run out of time. We've got really two components to this program, and one is really looking at knowledge-based learning, and the other skills-based learning. And one is really the first part we did on an online tutorial that we developed, and I'm going to give you access to that site today. And the second one we really did more in face-to-face workshops, teaching people how to, and kind of vignettes, how do you go about successfully asking for requests that you need from a professor? Many times students, whether you have a disability or not, are kind of freaked out by professors, afraid, I don't want to talk to him, you know, he may not do anything or he'll get mad or whatever. But we teach them about that. So that was the program I'm describing today is really one we did more in a face-to-face kind of workshop. So in a knowledge-based learning, we talked about the knowledge. What are your knowledge of your rights and responsibilities as a person with disability? What are you entitled to? And what knowledge about yourself? A lot of people with disabilities really don't know how to fully describe what their disability is or to describe what strengths they have. What do they bring to the table? What do they bring to the party that would say, hey, this is worth, if you care and you bring this much to the table, then I'm going to try to bring some stuff to the table as well. And then we have the skills-based learning practice, the seven-step model that I'm going to talk about in a minute. And then we talk about practice and role play. I'm going to talk a little bit about each, just a little bit more detail. The online tutorial we developed uses Universal Design for Learning features. We worked with some colleagues in e-learning design to develop this tutorial that students could get access to. Let me show you. If you note the www URL down below, www.accesstosuccess.ku.edu, gives you access to that tutorial. And I'll come back to this. You'll get to see this again in a few moments. So this is the opening web page. We don't have an internet connection. I don't have time to show you anyway. But when people come to this, they get a start and they get access to the first set of information about the online knowledge tutorial about ADA and accommodations that you're entitled to. And so they start, and then they have these different questions. And this is designed for multiple access to people, whether they had physical disabilities, sensory disabilities, they're blind, or they had. It's got also notes for people who have learning disabilities. So some of it, the text is not dense. We spent a lot of time thinking about how to do this so that anybody could approach us at different levels to try to reach out as many as we could. So this gives you just a little bit of an idea, and once you get a chance to get in there, if you are able to do that. One of the things we do is we ask them to assess their strengths and weaknesses. What do you bring to the table? What are the areas you need work in? So sometimes in high school, they might do that with your IEP, but when you get to college, there's nobody there to help you hold your hand, right? The people in the Student Disability Services Office might be able to help you, but you have to take the initiative to do that. So, but the point is, we want to really teach people to be self-advocates themselves. You're not always going to have a student disability services person with you. Or, hopefully, if you transition to employment situation, you want to be able to take these same skills with you, right? So that's kind of the thought. So assessing the strengths and weaknesses, we ask them to each think about, as we go through these different scenarios of how to make a request, and we have 38 different ones we use, give them a chance to think about, well, when I go to talk to the professor, what am I going to say to them? How am I going to talk about my situation? And I'm going to talk a little bit about how that works. On the skill-based module, we use a face-to-face workshop. We encourage both networking and practice. And what we have here is we'll have a seven-step basic ADA accommodations model. It's seven steps. Within these major steps, there are a few sub-steps. So the total, if you look at each one of the steps, sub-steps, it's about 17 discrete behaviors that we measure. And we have observational definitions so that if one was, Sue was looking at one of it, and somebody else was observing that video, they could both come to agreement and come up with some percentage of reliability, whether that they could agree on that behavior occurring or not. You provide detailed examples and non-examples, and then help them with this personalized scenario that they're supposed to develop. Here's what it looks like. Early on, the first thing we do is we open the meeting. So you go in, and they've got four or five different behaviors you admit when you meet the professor, whoever. Hi, my name is Glenn. It's nice to meet you, Dr. Smith. Thank you for taking time for seeing me this morning. And then from there, you'd make the accommodation request. I'm going to give you an example of what that is in just a minute, give examples of what that might look like. And then at that point, they can say, yes, I'll help you, or no, I can't help you. So if they say yes, one of the things we ask them to do then is we'd go right down and plan future actions. So you get the action, close the deal, and then summarize the meeting, close the meeting. But if they say no, I can't help you, you might say, well, is there any other suggestions you might give me to help me? 5 minutes, I can do it. If they give you a lame suggestion, you might ask for an alternate suggestion, right? If that doesn't work, we want you to at least, if they give you a suggestion, go back down and plan future actions. If it doesn't, at least get out of the office with a referral. Now, don't say, is there somebody else you know that could help me? No, that's not a good, you don't want to do that, but just say, do you know anybody else that might be able to help me with this? So there's certain ways to do this and not do it. And then you summarize and close the meeting. So here's an example real quickly. State your personal situation. This is making the request. I am an applied behavioral science major, and I'm taking your required RAT lab. State your personal strength. I have an A going for me in all the other non-lab parts of this course. Describe the challenge. I don't have a problem handling rats. Now, some people do. But it will be a challenge to try to wheel my wheelchair, and hold the rat at the same time. This is a personal example. I used to have the rat crawl up my sweater. That was not good. Luckily, they were trained not to So make a specific request. I'm wondering if I can have a graduate teaching assistant help me transfer the rat between holding cage and an experimental rat cage. And a lot of times we say, no, we can't help with the budget's cut, the GTAs, we don't have any. So we'd always usually say no because we wanted to go through the whole repertoire of behaviors that they could exhibit. And then you state potential benefit. This will help me complete my required RAT lab. So you always want to give them a rationale. Why would this help? You don't have to do it, but it's a good thing to do, right, to get them buy-in. Then we talk about all these. We do all these different situations. And then the students get a chance. We give them a fire hose of information for 2 days. Then we have a thing called Stump the Chump. Anybody ever heard of the Stump the Chump in Boston here? Come on, guys, right? Car guys, right? Yeah. Click and clack, right? Yeah. Harvard, right? And right. So these guys, I have this online thing, three of them, Stump the Chump, you have to stump somebody. And what they did, we asked them to give somebody a disability. And so one of the students gave one of our people that pretended to be a student disability. They said, we want you to be a person with learning disability, dyslexic, and have Tourette syndrome. And we role play this. That was hard. So create your own personal scenario with the worksheet. I'm moving on here quickly. The results for the knowledge-based online tutorial, we did a pre-test, post-test score of what do they know about ADA and accommodations. There's a 12-item multiple choice. We had 52 students in the year 3 field test. Mean pre-test, they were 67%, post-test 85%, so significantly at a 0.001 level. Skills-based, now this is just the observation. Again, if Solin or Jeff or somebody else, Adrian, would observe the videos, could they come up with the same scoring? So we got reliability. And so we found out the pretest reliability was 97%. That's pretty darn good for whether all these 17 different behaviors occurred or not. And then post-test was 96%. That's anything above 80%, and 90% is really pretty darn good. So we were rocking. Video vignette observations. So when they scored the vignettes, all these behaviors, whether they occurred or not, 52 students across four schools. We had two large state universities. We had an Indian Nations University, and we worked with a Metro Community College as part of this process. So we had quite a diverse mix of schools. Pre-test scoring on the vignettes are this, of all these accommodation requesting behaviors they're supposed to do, they had about 42% correct. Post-testing, 74.7%, significant at 0.001. So we looked at, we also did kind of an error analysis of what are the areas that they're not getting, you know, in that training, because something's wrong. Either we're not doing the training right or something. So that was something we also helped us. Well, what are lessons learned as we're closing this down with maybe 1 minute left? Disability can't equally be segmented, you know, when arranging sample groups. And when I wrote this grant, I thought, oh, cool. We'll do one-third people with physical disabilities, one-third with sensory, and one-third learning. Well, how does that work out in the real distribution? Boy, was I off, right? Mostly are what? Learning, right? So we had to do some readjustment on that. Different approach and learning style when you train people at the university level versus the community college level. So we had to really adapt that. And I'm almost done. Well, future directions, where do we go from here? We have completed the online tutorial, and we also have completed, for both knowledge, and we just completed the online tutorial for scenarios. So you can actually, when you go on that tutorial, you'll see different examples and non-examples of how to approach a professor about making requests. Some from people with a physical disability, some with a learning disability, some with a visual disability. So three different kinds of examples of how that looks. Some of the non-examples are kind of hilarious, so it might be worth a look. So I got a student, Jeff, in front here. He's doing dissertation work on the sufficiency of this learning, right, for the, especially for the area of online acquisition of the skills. So we think we're question is it necessary, but is it sufficient really to make change behavior? If not, what do we do next on that? We're exploring the possibility of maybe eventually creating a smartphone technology that students could use to, they may not have to go through all the behaviors, but just in time, go to the ones that they need. They may have some already mastered, but what are the ones that they need to do? Two other things, you could possibly adapt this within a high school level situation, perhaps, with some modification. But the other thing I'm thinking about is it's not just what's being done at the university level or college level, but then how do you take the skills learned here, generalize, transfer them when they go into employment situation? Because a lot of the same skills we're talking about here are great. I mean, in the workplace, not just for people with disabilities, for anybody, right? We should teach this to our some of our politicians, maybe. So I want to be careful what I say because it's being recorded. Here's the contact information. That's, again, the tutorial for Access to Success. And thank you for your time.